Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Pepper Podcast. I'm so excited to start today. We have my good friend here, Bruske Levy. How are you doing, Levy?
Hi, it's good to be here. I'm kind of excited. I've been waiting for this.
Right, man, don't feel bad, man. I talked to a couple people right now. You know, complications arise. You know, people are still going back to work. And some people, I just assume a lot of people have a lot of free time on them. But, you know, things happen, you know, scheduling conflicts and whatnot. And when you're living with a house of other people, getting like quiet time, especially for something like this, is very hard. And it's frustrating, man. It really is.
I know that feeling all too well, since I also live with other people within my household, and it's just hard to get time alone or time for, like, you know, peace and quiet. But right. Thankfully, because of our work schedule, I've got downtime, thankfully.
That's good. No, I get you, man. I mean, like, I'll just be, everything will be ready up the week. Everyone will be out of the house. But then when Sunday rolls around, all of a sudden, everybody's in the house. Everyone wants to clean. Everyone wants to make noise. So frustrating.
Oh, my God.
That's the worst thing about me wanting to be a streamer. Like, I can't, you know, especially when you're trying to explain to parents and stuff like that. Like, hey, I get on camera and record myself talking to people and playing video games. You know, we're in our 20s right now, right? So, you know, they kind of would expect us to be like, all right, fine, whatever, you do your thing. But they still don't quite understand it because they're kind of like boomers. So, you know, what can you do, man? It's frustrating. I try my best to explain it, but I guess once I start getting affiliate and start making money, they can start respecting it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's great to have you, my friend. How have you been doing? How's life? You know, this is crappy so far start of a decade, man. If I had to give a progress report to this year alone, it'd be a D+.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on this year. All kinds of crazy things are happening. I just find it hard to believe that so many unfortunate things are just happening one after another.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy, man. Like, I was like, man, new decade, new start, everything. But nope, everything's just been worse and worse. And I'm very interested to see, like, how is life going to go back to normal at this point? You know, like,
you could try and compare it to like a roller coaster, but I guess this roller coaster only goes down.
It just keeps going down and down. It's just, man, it's crazy for, like, we're at the halfway point. And I mean, like, I don't know what could happen.
Where's the point where we're coming back from that? Like, Jesus. Yeah, you're right. We're in June. We're in June. That's already
crazy, dude. I expect all this to be like blown over within a month. But look at this. We're 6 months in. Oh, my God. It's crazy, man. You know, life is. It's a lot, man. It's a lot. But, you know, let's, you know, get away from the current events right now. We'll get back to that later, because I want to ask you some things about how this, you know, because we can't be blinded by ignorance. So it's a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course. By it.
So for anybody who's first time viewers or maybe first time ever hearing about you, tell me a little bit about yourself, Levy. Like, introduce yourself. Like, if you had, this is how I describe everyone. Whenever I tell someone, introduce yourself, imagine you're doing an issue one of a comic book story of yourself.
All right. I could do that. So, my name's Bruske Levy. I pretty much, I'm a competitive fighting game player, but I'm just a stream monster, pretty much. I just stream anime fighting games while being a wage slave by day, stream hero by night, pretty much.
Yeah, wage cucking, man. Yeah, I get you, man. That to me is the dream, to get out of wage cucking. That's what we got to strive for, man.
You got
to
pay them bills somehow.
You got to pay, you know, wagey, what was it? Wagey KG, get back into your KG or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I watched those and I'm just glad that, like, okay, I'm not the only one who feels like this. But I'll tell you one thing though, man, like, going back to what we're talking about this year, I think that if there's any sign about everything that's going on this year, is that if you wanted to be a self-made man, this was the time to prove yourself. Because you later realize, like, go back to what we were saying about this year, you know, work is crazy, like, right now. Like, I'm grateful I'm still working, lot of people are not working right now, and a lot of my friends are not working right now. They're just kind of sitting around, and it's crazy because a lot of my friends, they make big bucks. Like, they work on really big projects, and, you know, it really proves the point that nothing in job security is ever secure. You could lose your job for anything, and not just your job, but just outside resources could cause that situation. But yeah, I think that if you ever wanted to make this moment in your life to say, I want to be a self-made man, this was the moment you should realize that, which that's my goal, and I think your goals as well. So let's go ahead and round back to that fighting game part, because, you know, you're a very competitive FGC member. So tell me a little bit about the history about that. Like, what was your introduction into the fighting game community, and what was your first game you ever got competitive in?
Whew, man, that's taking me way back. I guess it kind of has to stem from when I was still in the Marine Corps. I would dabble with fighting games. Oh, right, so as I was saying, that takes me back to when I was still in the Marine Corps. I would play fighting games every so often when I had free time. And pretty much what introduced me to the FGC was when I had time off, and I would come visit my family back home. My younger brother, this is when I believe Street Fighter 4 was still popular, and one of my buddies, he played Jury. We would play on and off, but like I wouldn't take it super competitive. I only started taking fighting games super competitive when, again, I came home to hang out with my younger brother. And I met the guy he was dating, and his name was Tyson. And because of this guy I met, like I saw him playing Street Fighter V on his PS4, and I'm like, oh hey, you know, I played that too. I recently just got it because this is when it barely came out, and it was like season one, you know,
right.
Raw DP was still fully invul and whatnot, and. You know, we started playing. He's like, "Oh, you know, you're pretty good. You should come with me. We're gonna head over to an offline session at a bar." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, cool. I'll go." I'll go.
Okay.
So we went to this place, and I got to meet my like one of the most well known Vega players. I think he goes by he went by Flash Metroid back then. Very well known Florida player. And ever since I played him, I'm like, yo, like this is really fun. I want to keep doing it. And that was pretty much my first introduction to the actual competitive scene of fighting games. And I that's when I joined the FGC.
So you got competitive around the time Street Fighter V came out.
I mean, so I more or less, yeah. Because of that, when I had to go back to Japan, because that's where I was stationed. There wasn't many people playing Street Fighter V at the time, you know, and playing on, online, with PS4.
Oh, okay, online. But I couldn't
do much about that.
Oh, okay.
Like, the internet wasn't really that good for where we were on base. So, that's when I got introduced to anime fighting games, because I would get frustrated with the connection because, you know, on base internet is pretty bad. So I would go to the arcade cabinets out in town, and that's how I got introduced to anime fighting games. And the very first one I got introduced to was Melty Blood. And I'm like, yo, this game was amazing. And that's how I started as an anime fighting game player.
So you say that you're more of an anime fighting game player.
My first step into the FGC was Street Fighter 3, because that's when I first started playing actual fighting games. You know, I learned the typical BMB, learned how to play the game. Street Fighter 4 taught me more of that. I got to then I got introduced to watching people play on Justin TV back in the day.
Justin TV, man. Oh, that's a throwback. And, man, those were the days.
I started trying my own shot at the competitive scene via Street Fighter V. You know, that was the first time I ever went to a tournament in Orlando, CEO. That was the very first FGC tournament that I went to. And because of the whole vibe, how everyone treated each other, like, I love that sense of, like, camaraderie, that despite having to fight this person in bracket later, now, though, you can ask questions, ask for sets, and they won't say no, because that's what the FGC is for. You love fighting people, and I love that.
Right. That's great. Like I never competed. I've always been like fascinated with the tournament scene. I hope to one day like go to a tournament with you guys and not just for any fighting game, like even Smash Brothers too. But yeah, like that's crazy because, you know, I think a lot of people get this perspective that maybe the fighting community is like kind of like Fight Club, you know, where it's like aggressive, but it's really not like that whatsoever. I see a lot of people are very welcoming and very helpful, and they want to help each other out and stuff. That's interesting.
You get the occasional like.
Right, you're gonna get some bad apples
here. Or like, what is that called? A jobber, pretty much, where they act like they're a bad guy, but you know, when you meet them and everything, they're actually cool people. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's a gig. I mean, not a gig. I would say like
an act. Yeah, you know,
that's what you want. Yeah. Okay, well, that's interesting. So when Street Fighter V, you know, I want to bring this up with you a lot. So Street Fighter V was like your introductory, and you said that you're more into anime fighting games. So what do people are expecting when they look you up as Broski Levy? Like, what is your games you're competing in? Because I don't think you're like Sonic Fox. You could play like 50 different games and be good at them. You know what I'm saying? I think you're more of like...
I play a lot of fighting games. I'm decent at it, but I wouldn't say like... Oh my,
No. But I mean, like, what are you competing in?
Well, mainly right now, I mainly compete in BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle. I sort of mess around with Grand Blue Fantasy Versus and Undernight and Birth.
Okay. So that's interesting. Okay. So I went around that question and about your time in the military. So tell me about that. Like, what was your story about you joining the military? Oh,
well, I graduated high school in 2010. Didn't like immediately go job searching. I spent like about almost half a year to a year just lounging about at home, and you know, I didn't sit well with the parents. So it was either find a job or leave, and that caused a whole dilemma with my mother, and I had to end up moving in with my father, who helped me out by having me work with him at the mechanic shop that he worked at, which is why I have all this knowledge on vehicles now. Thankfully, you know, it wasn't so bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
So while I was doing this, I forgot to mention that before I graduated, there was a Marine recruiter who showed up at our school because during our class, I was also part of the ROTC or JROTC in high school for about 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that already piqued my interest for the military. And after I graduated, they reached out to me and like, hey, you know, you can do this like debt program where it's called the delayed entry program. It'll take some time so we can train you, get you used to things, you know, before we get qualified or we get approved of being sent out. So we had to fill out at the time I was only 17 and I had to get approved by my parents, which, you know, they weren't. So that's literally almost a reason why I had to wait till I was 18, a whole year of just training with these people every Thursday at certain times, Tuesday, Thursdays at certain times. I would just take the bus to Bird Road and just go to the Marine recruit station there and just do some exercises, talk to the guys, do some tests, stuff like that. And then eventually, okay, you know, a year goes by. I passed the physical exam that's needed to get recruited and sit at boot camp, and you know, parents were all distraught and whatnot, but you know, 3 months later they see me. I graduate and I became a Marine.
Damn, that's crazy, man. Well, that's good. Well, you know, here I respect our troops and I respect you for your service to the country, and great to see that you know, you got accepted into it, man. Well, that's good. So tell me, do you have any like stories you could share about it? Because you mentioned you were stationed in Japan. And I remembered when I first went to your room, you had all these like crazy figures and stuff like that. And I was like, well, this is like crazy, man. Like, where'd you get all this stuff? It's like, oh, and I remember telling, oh, I went to Japan. And like, why you went to Japan? Like, oh, I was stationed there. I'm like, tell me about that. What was it like being in the military and being stationed to, I mean, because I imagine you wanted to go to Japan at one point.
Oh my life, God, right? I have no idea. Like, so before I even got super into fighting games, I was just a straight up 100% full-time a weeb. I would just watch anime either I lived, breathed anime. I played trading card games like Yu-Gi-Oh and Pokemon and whatnot at school. So when I finally graduated the Marine Corps boot camp in South Carolina, they sent us to do infantry training for about a month and a half, and in North Carolina. I got sent to Camp Geiger.
Okay.
It's a really shitty place, but the guys that trained us really cool. You know, they taught us what they had to. From there, because of the job that I signed the contract for, they sent me to a school in Pensacola for a full year. For something that you know, in the civilian side, you would have to go to school for almost 4 years. So I had to cram all that in just 1 year. And still maintain an average of about a B or higher, because oh man, their expectations are really high for a job like that. So after that year passed, I had three options that I could sign up for. I stay on the East Coast and get stationed in South Carolina, which God no, I didn't want to do that. The second option was to go to California. And, you know, I'm like, you know, I didn't join the, like, I joined the Marine Corps, but, like, I might as well take advantage of being sent all over the place, not just stateside. So right. Then one of the instructors there that taught us was like, there's an option that you can get to go overseas. What you'll get is kind of pretty much what the Marine Corps needs. So, like, if I chose to go overseas, I get sent wherever they need me. And I'm like, you know, I'll okay. do that.
I'm on call
pretty much. So, okay. They pretty much have you do like a wish list. Like my first priority is to go. I put overseas, California, and then like third on the list was the only other option was staying in South Carolina, which I didn't want. So they prioritized gotcha. The first two. I got super lucky. I hear was what they told me. Because when I got my orders, because they made a whole big deal, you know, they do like a ceremony, they pass us papers for orders, we get a certificate for completion and all that, and as we're reading the orders aloud, I hear the three letter number code that tells us where we're going, and I got 1JN, and as you know, that almost sounds familiar, it's an abbreviation for
right.
The first company, Japan, and I'm like, no way! I was so ecstatic. It took me so much to hold in my excitement to wait till I got back to the barracks room to call up my mom, to call up my dad. Like,
right,
mom, dad, I'm getting stationed in Japan for 2 years. Like, you don't have no idea how excited I was. I got to experience so much culture, food, all kinds of things. I was ready for it.
I imagine like everything was paid for.
Definitely. I was just living there, and, you know, free of charge, free food, yeah, free meals a day. But yeah, with a roof over my head, pretty much.
And what year was this when you
were stationed? I got stationed in 2012.
2012. Okay. And how was it like being in Japan? Like, I don't imagine you know any Japanese.
No, I did not know a lick. Just what your average weeb would know from watching anime, yeah.
Weeb, yeah.
You know, all the common meme. Oh, I don't see
these. You know, you didn't like get off the plane and. Yeah, I was about to say, didn't get off the plane.
So no, luckily, I wasn't there. I didn't get sent overseas alone. One of the guys I went to school with also got sent to Japan. You know, we stuck together for a buddy system. You know, because that's what we're taught. You know, stick with someone else, and you know, just in case you get lost. And luckily, right. When we got to the airport, there was already some English speakers waiting for us. And we also ran into some other Marines straight out of school, also being sent to the same base. But the thing is, they didn't have any space. So we were like wondering, how the heck are we going to get to base? And we ended up paying $100 worth of a taxi ride from the airport to base, because we had no other clue how to get there. When we got there, the base was already on quiet hours. Everybody was asleep because we got there super late. Coming from Florida, you gotta take a plane from Florida to California. I'm sorry, Florida to Chicago to California. Then from California to Japan was a whole 14-hour airplane ride. So you can imagine how late it was already when we got there. So it was a really awkward moment because when we got there, the guy on duty was like, why didn't you just call us? We would have sent the ride for free to come pick you up. I'm like, wow, now we just spent like 100,000 yen's worth of a taxi ride for nothing.
Yikes. Damn, that's crazy. But,
I did take advantage of the opportunities that they gave me there, and I took Japanese lessons. I still have my book here that I glimpse through every so often to refresh my memory. So it's not like I got stationed there and did not decide to learn the language. If anything, I was more than willing to do that because it also helped out when I went off base with a buddy to go hit up the arcade cabinets. And that's how I got introduced to Anime Fighters. Because I took this class, I also wanted to practice what I learned. Thankfully, the guys at the arcade cabinet, you know, most of them are you know, I don't want to say like they're not shut-ins, but like they're kind of people. Like they're friendly because they know we're here to play fighting games.
So, right. We're talking about your Marine buddies, or we're talking
the guys
about
that I met out in town.
Oh, like the people in the country, like just being
Yep.
Oh, okay. So
yeah,
the locals.
Pretty much, the locals. They're really nice people. So that's how I got introduced to anime fighting games, because I saw an arcade cabinet for Melty Blood, and I got introduced to that, and like I was so confused because like normally like Street Fighter games, it's six buttons, but this was just four, right. And I'm like, wow, this is so weird.
And I'm assuming you never played like SNK fighting like King of Fighters. I imagine
like my very first fighting game was just Street Fighter on the Street Fighter 2 Turbo on the Super Nintendo. Yeah. On the Super
Nintendo. Yeah, that's a classic. That's a classic. And, you know, now that I think about it, I don't think I've actually touched a Street Fighter until Street Fighter 4, if my
the other Street Fighter games weren't nearly as accessible because I believe Dirt Strike was only on the Dreamcast. And at least here in Florida, we don't have a lot of scenes or arcade scenes until recently. You know, in Kendall, we have Arcade Odyssey,
which is crazy.
But like growing up.
And by the way, anybody who's listening to this, if you're in the Kendall or Miami area, look up Arcade Odyssey. That place is hella dope. It's just got a new expansion. Well, no, that's not new, but like it just started adding new machines, and they bought off the place right next door, so the place is a lot bigger. Look up Arcade Odyssey. I guess this enough. It's a awesome, awesome place.
Yeah, rest in peace to Versus Gaming Center, though. They're shutting down.
I've never been there. It's such a shame because I know you and your brother keep talking about
there,
it.
Yeah, we go there every, I believe, Friday for Street Fighter V tournaments.
That's cool. So going back to your story about the... About Melty Blood. So that was your introduction to Melty Blood. If my memory is right, it's made by Arc Systems, right?
French Bread, but it was published by
French Bread. Yeah. Right. I'm trying to think. Okay.
Tight Moon and French Bread. Well,
French Bread. Okay. It's French Bread. But
Arc Systems didn't come into the works until Unib, because Unib was just a beta. We didn't. There was no like. Actual game, you would just play at an arcade cabinet and play the beta of Undernight and Birth until they released Unreal on the PlayStation 3,
which is
and even then it wasn't localized to the States. It was just kept online or on a disc for Japan, and that's pretty much what I ended up doing. I hit that PSN. I still have the disc, the Japanese disc here. It's funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, you have to import it. It's not really released here in the States. Okay. All right, then. So you went. So you got in the military. You got stationed in Japan. And then you got introduced to fighting games.
Timing, too, to get introduced to anime fighting games. Because, as you can probably tell by my name, I'm a huge Persona fan. So while I was stationed in Japan, one of my most favorite fighting games came out. And it was Persona 4 Arena. You have no idea how excited I was. I even got my roommate to play the game. He played Narukami because it was like easy, but he knew the character because he also was an avid video game player, so he knew about Persona 4. He was like, "Oh, I know this is the main character."
Okay,
and, you know, but that pretty much solidified my placement and competitively playing anime fighters, because that's when I started taking everything serious. You know, I would sit in the lab for hours practicing. The only thing that I couldn't figure out was, since I was relatively new to the anime FGC, I didn't have ways to reach out to people to learn until, you know, Discord became a thing, and that was a lot. That's a huge time gap, mind you. So my only way of learning from other people was just random net play. I at the time there's you know, we had Skype, and you had Skype groups, but I had no clue of that.
God.
So I was just like, man, blind, and had no way of learning until around.
So it was right. No, I was just saying, so back then it was more like you kind of learned as you go. It wasn't like a guy. There wasn't like a very accessible like guide system or like
someone to help tutor me or talk to. Yeah.
Right. Like I've hopped into a couple of your to other fighting game servers for mainly for just conversation stuff. But I go to like servers, and it's crazy to me to see like channels dedicated to just one character, and everyone talks about like the meta and like, okay, this character can do this. This is plus on that, and I find that just fascinating. Where it's like, man, there's a lot of time and effort you gotta put into this.
Community
sort of stuff
groups too. have moved up obviously with time, because like back then it was just you'd set up a Skype group chat, and that was it. You couldn't do anything. There wasn't much else. Which at the time,
right,
I had no idea that was even a thing until it was too late. So again, that's why I mentioned that being stationed in Japan and then having Persona 4 Arena come out at the time was a blessing in disguise, because little unbeknownst to me, they installed Persona 4 Arena arcade cabinets in the arcade that I frequent. So I pretty much learned how to play Persona with the Japanese locals that were there. And they were just like, random American just trying to play random games because, you know, he's bored or whatever. It wasn't until Ultimate.
Right.
I'm sorry. It wasn't. No. It wasn't until I entered a tournament for Blaze Blue Continuum Shift.
Right.
The locals that frequent that area started taking notice. Oh, hey, this guy keeps showing up and playing, and I would sometimes show up at the arcade really early after work because I wanted to watch people play, and you know the whole language barrier was an issue too, so I couldn't ask questions. So like I didn't want to pass off as rude, but I stuck close while watching them. I would watch how they would input things. I would watch how they
I had to visually train myself
while watching these guys. And mind you, I couldn't tell if they were good or not. I just watched what they did and questioned. Okay, you know, he did this. Right. Why? It wasn't until I entered a local tournament for Blaze Blue Continuum Shift. I played.
That was just
it was my very first anime tournament that I've ever entered.
Oh, your first tournament game was in Japan with Blaze Blue Continuum Shift.
In Japan. And I played Bang.
Were you the only American player in that tournament? So you just stuck out in the crowd.
I stuck out like a sore thumb. And this is when I still played on. It's pretty much when I still played on pad too. Like I hadn't been introduced to using a fight stick at all.
Yeah, that's
funny. I'm mentioning this story because this is how I got introduced to using a fight stick. So, for this tournament, there was a prize. We didn't know. Like, I was just gonna enter it for like, you know, the participating poster. Yeah, that too, for fun to learn. But like,
oh, you get a participation. Yeah,
there's a cool Blaze Blue Continuum Shift poster that they handed out because it was an art.
Oh, that's cool. Do you still have it?
It's in my storage, actually. It's in the storage in my garage, but I have it still.
Okay. Okay, that's cool. I'll see if I can find it. If not, you could like send me a link to it. I think that's interesting. I didn't know they give out like. Is this like just for that tournament,
it was
or
just
like
that. Local? Yeah,
it was just that. Okay,
the arcade. That's neat. Like,
okay.
So like, I had no clue, pretty much what was going to be given away for winning. So,
what was the prize?
You've probably seen it in my room. I'm really proud of it. It was a Blaze Blue Continuum Shift special edition fight stick that they won. And like, I was surprised that I was able to win this tournament because, as you know, the Arxis netcode is
Yeah, we'll get to that. I actually have a whole thing I want to talk to you about, like netcode. Yeah, we'll get to netcode and fighting games later because that's a big conversation piece I want to have. But keep going.
I pretty much have to train myself using NetPlay and you know frequently visiting. Mm.
And do you feel like playing with NetPlay is like a disadvantage?
No, sometimes if that's the only thing that you have accessible to, you can't think of it as a disadvantage. You just have to think of it as the necessary tool to grow. That's one of the things that even now during this whole coronavirus issue that we can't go offline and people are complaining, oh my God, dude, I want this NetPlay sucks, man. I want offline. And like, complaining isn't going to get you anywhere. You gotta just
right.
Face the facts, and this is what we're left with. So just use the tool. As someone once told me, don't complain, just use it. And it's just in general. Something that he was talking about fighting game wise. It was actually one of my friends. His one of his sayings is just use it. Just use it. And it wasn't just like. Again, I have to emphasize, it wasn't like for just fighting games or just something in general. It's just use what you can to get through. And that's pretty much what I do with NetPlay. Even more so now since I stream and everything. NetPlay is my go-to for every single thing that I can do. If I have, because like here, at least here in Florida, we don't necessarily in South Florida, we don't have a lot of locals to go to. You know, like Arcade Odyssey for anime games, anyways, because Arcade Odyssey mainly does like the mainline Tekken, Street Fighter V stuff.
Yeah, the bigger
stuff. So going back onto the story for the Blaze Blue tournament. It was my first anime fighting game tournament. You know, I was nervous. A lot of the players there were looking down on me because it's just some random American that's just trying to make memories or like he probably doesn't know what he's doing. Unbeknownst to them, this is the same guy that's been watching all of you play, taking notes, practicing, and luckily, this is when YouTube started uploading, tech videos on YouTube. That's another big reason why I was able to study, thankfully, because YouTube was
right. Did you learn how to do the infinite combo in Marvel vs. Capcom 2?
No, I don't know how to do the infinite, because I didn't play Marvel vs. Capcom 2 like that.
Did they have a Marvel 2 machine?
No,
in Japan?
They had a bunch of at least in the arcade that I went to, they had Garo, they had King of Fighters, they had Chaos Code, weirdly, which is.
Now in these machines, are those like the modern ones where it's like kind of like a candy cab, but a little bit more modern looking, where it's much more easier to just swap out the board and actually, it's not like a full on.
Yeah, it's an all in one arcade cabinet pretty much because like it's like you had multiple arcade cabinets, but that one cabinet had multiple fighting games that you could just switch and play.
Okay. So you could just put in a credit, and you have all these options.
You put in the 100 yen coin, and then you can choose what game to play.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. So it's a multi-game arcade. Okay. That's interesting because when I look up like Japanese arcades, like you'd be surprised. Like you think that they would still keep like the original machines, but
the only ones that had the original arcade cabinet was for like I believe Street Fighter 3, Ultra Street Fighter 4, and.
Street Fighter 4 did arcade.
Persona 4 Arena, and those were the only three. Oh, and BlazBlue. Those were the only ones that had an original arcade cabinet,
dedicated machine. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. So, all right then. So that was your first tournament, and how was the placement? How was the placement for that?
I was shocked because it wasn't like a tournament that you have today where you set up on a console. No. They had that's why I'm telling you, this was my first introduction to using a stick. It was the arcade cabinet stick, and I brought my pad and everything because I was playing on the PS3.
Because you were expecting to play the console version.
Gotcha. Like that's pretty much how I learned. But no, the I'm assuming the arcade owners didn't have the kind of money to provide consoles and everything, and I guess no one thought of bringing their console to set it up. So I'm like, oh well. That was my first It was like a crash course to.
That's a question. I'm sorry. To use a pad like on the spot, like because you know before you used to play pad like casually when you went to the arcade, right? Unless they let you use
pad. No, I had to learn how to use stick.
Right. No, it's definitely a learning curve. I could definitely vouch for it. Like I was 100% pad player. Granted, I don't play competitively, but like around like 2015, I was like, you know what? Let me try getting this stick, and I've been playing with the same stick since 2015. That's a question I want to ask you. So, I think this is mainly an American thing, but I think Japan, whenever they do tournaments, they always prefer using actual arcade machines, right? If the game. So it's not like here in America where like you're kind of expected to play with a console version. And thankfully we're not in the day and age where like the PS1 era where like arcade ports of games on the PlayStation 1 were kind of like wonky or they weren't like exactly one-to-one to the arcades. So if you go to like Japan, because I went back and I watched like a couple Japanese tournaments and stuff, and I noticed that they still play with machines. Like they don't just pull out sticks and play consoles.
I believe it's because it feels more natural and like using the...
It's kind of like with Smash players, like with Melee, they have
CRT, to play with CRT. Yes, exactly. It's pretty much the same reason.
Okay, all right. So and was it like how in tournaments where it's like they have the two arcade
back
machines
back,
like facing each other way? Yep. Okay, so that was you basically walked in as an American, no understanding the Japanese language, watching players all over the shoulders and learning to play like that, and. And you know, you casually like, okay, I'm gonna play the arcade version with the arcade machine at the arcade. But when I'm at home, I practice with the pad. And you thought, okay, there's a tournament. They're most likely gonna be playing with the console version, right?
So I made that I'll have mistake. I brought my pad, and they're I already see them. Yeah,
and it was completely like, waste of time. Oh my god, like, that must have been horrible.
I had to do a crash course on how to do my BMBs and whatnot, and all these kinds of things with the arcade cabinet stick. And the tournament was already gonna happen. So like I rushed to the cabinet. I started up arcade mode. I popped in, you know, the 100 yen, and I just sat there trying to get adjusted, get a feel for it. I could for the love of me not like a lot of my inputs were whack because I'm not huge into using an arcade stick. But eventually it grew.
Yeah, it's crazy. You think like on paper, like saying the input should apply the same, but something about the way how you get to hold the stick.
And coming from like fighting games like Street Fighter V, where most annotations are like, oh, you know, crouching leg kick, stand fierce, stand around house, stuff like that, or quarter circle fierce, you know, stuff like that. No. This also had to force me to get introduced to anime fighting games notations where it's like 2A. 5B, 5C, stuff like that. JD.
Yeah.
IAD, J, jump can, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, I had to learn that shit on the fly because, like, again, I couldn't figure out a way to reach out to anyone to learn. And, you know, the whole language barrier there, was a huge wall for me.
And did you have anybody, like, maybe in stateside who could, like, talk to you about this kind of stuff? Or is it, like, it was all by yourself?
Yeah, because you remember, I was stuck in Japan for about 2-3 years, so, like, I had to learn on my own, pretty much. I didn't get introduced to learning to talk to people and whatnot until Ultimax came out, but that was a while after that BlazBlue tournament was happening. But back to that.
Gotcha.
You know, obviously I had issues registering because I didn't speak the language, but you know, the arcade owner sees me there from time to time watching them. So like he kind of knew what I was there for to, you know, just to have fun and try it out. So this also brings me how I made my name. Cause you usually want to enter with a tag or whatnot, an alias, you know, not use your, I mean, there, right. You have the people that every so often use their actual name. But not me, or you know, not most. Yeah.
We're talking about Japan, right?
So,
okay.
On the spot, I had to come up with something. I'm like, oh, geez, I've never done this before. Because like usually, I'll just enter with like my PSN. You know, my PSN back in the day was Leviathan 9845, but I wasn't gonna enter with that. So That's when I learned to shorten that to get the name that I have now, Levi. So I just entered with that. At the time, I didn't know, Attack on Titan was a thing, but. I entered with Levi.
Right.
I entered as Levi, and that was my first step into the world of enemy fighting in tournaments. And I guess I got lucky. I don't know, but I won. I won.
You won first
shocking,
place.
Shockingly, I won.
How was the competition? Was it hard, or was it like a bunch of like
doing? They knew what they were doing. Okay, canceling, mix up, stuff like that. And I'm like, wow, okay.
How many people were in this tournament? Like, how many competed?
The local had about 15, 20 people.
15, 20 people. Was it okay? So 15. 20
and it was also double, double elimination as usual. You know, first to two.
Okay.
And
so you saw like grand finals so you had like a loser bracket, and
it was a completely different feeling when I entered for like a Street Fighter 4 at the time when I was still stateside.
But that was like after the first tournament, right? Okay, so and you didn't even know like how the tournament setup worked.
I just stood there and waited for my name to get called to play, and like.
I still kind of need to understand. Like, I don't know how like grand finals how those loser bracket. But like, yeah, I was just thinking like, what do you do when you're in a country, you're going to your first tournament, you don't know the language, and you're just like, all right, I'm just gonna wait when they call my
name. Obviously, you're gonna get this feeling of like, they're looking down on me because like, I'm just some random American that just wants to play to have fun. Unbeknownst to them, I actually wanted to take the game seriously. And learn and whatnot.
Yeah, you weren't just like, oh, I'll play this. Let me play the
I'm sitting there by myself facing my opponent at the arcade cabinet, and he's got a whole crowd behind him watching it, and I'm just there by myself. I'm like,
man. Oh. That's a David and Goliath situation, like, man.
First round starts.
That's cool though, because like that's like a that's like a presence.
Because of what happened that day, they came around to being friendly with me, and even more so when Ultimax hit the arcade cabinet. Like, because Ultimax was there, I was always there. I was always there trying to learn or learn new ways of playing the game with Yosuke, and that's how I got introduced to Skype. But I'll save that for later. But for now, during that BlazBlue tournament, it was just I was just there by myself. My usually you do a buddy system with another Marine when you go out in town, but he was just hanging around playing like random rhythm games and whatnot, or the crane game.
Like into competitive, he was I'm just gonna watch my buddy play. I'm gonna play her. Okay, that's cool. That's cool. And did your friend like watch you play?
He wasn't interested in BlazBlue. At the time, he was just playing random. Okay.
He was like, "All right, do your thing, kid. I'll pick you up later."
He was just hanging around. He's like, "Hey, let me know when you're done, so we can go out and get good food and whatnot."
Gotcha. So after BlazBlue, and so you got introduced. So you went to Japan. You got introduced to fighting games and the whole arcade thing. Because unfortunately, though, here in the West, arcades are kind of a dying breed. It's a sad thing, but it's time changes and whatnot. But I'm still glad we have these arcades, where mainly they're just passion projects. And like when you got a passion and people have that same feeling of that same passion, they want to support it. But and I'm imagining like that wasn't like the only arcade you saw in Japan, right? You saw
you had your typical I think you'll say 2-3 story building with just a bunch of arcade
cabinets. Oh yeah, they have like an entire floor dedicated to it.
That's also how I got introduced Mobile Suit Gundam. It's called Mobile Suit Gundam Pod. It's pretty much a giant.
Oh yeah, I saw those. Oh, yeah, dude, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh my god.
There's something similar like that with Star Wars that my stepbrother was telling me about, and it looks kind of cool, man. I just think like Japanese arcades are like on a whole other level. Like here in America, arcades are like a passion thing, but in Japan, like arcades are still like a viable platform. Granted, a little bit more modern. It's not that like I don't think you even like pay tokens anymore. Now everything's like through a card system, and you have to like sign up to like a specific publishing team.
It was a Konami card, a different.
Yeah. Konami, that's the one. I remember when DDR was coming out, and God forbid the Metal Gear Solid 3 pachinko machines. God damn, that's if you ever wanted to see something do you ever just want to like see something because you're curious and you know you want to see it, but when you actually see it, it's like not something you wanted to see now, because now you got to live with it for the rest of your life. That's the Metal Gear Solid 3 pachinko machine, because someone in Konami put so much effort into those Fox Engine cutscenes, and they look drop dead gorgeous. And it's the sad reality is that some old Japanese fart is going to sit behind there for hours on end, going deaf because those pachinko parlors are loud as hell. You got to put earpieces in. I don't know if you ever went to a pachinko parlor, but they're really loud, right? You have to wear like. Like, I remember watching a Bunny Hops video where he talked about pachinko machines, and he was like saying, like, you have to wear like earpieces in, you can't hear anything, there's no windows, you smoke all the damn time there. And man, I just remember seeing the granted not in person, but through video, and I'm just like, my God, they actually did it. They actually made the fan favorite game of the series into a pachinko machine. And this is what we got. but yeah, aside from that little tangent, so you did Blaze Blue. So that's when you said, all right, I'm going to get into competitive. Now, at that moment when you were playing Blaze Blue, did you have this like realization where it's like, okay, I want to be the best at fighting games? I want to.
No, not at all. That was not my mindset when I first started. I was just eager to learn and just try my shot and see how well I can do. And that's pretty much what I did. Okay. I didn't go into this thinking, you know, I'm going to be the best player. I'm going to, you know, do all kinds of stuff, get all kinds of medals and plaques and whatever. No. That was not it. Baby steps, man. Baby steps. I just wanted to get proficient with the character that I was playing and the system for the game.
Right. No, I mean, like, you want to get good at it.
I wanted to get good. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. It's one thing for me to be like, all right, this is fun. Like, I buy fighting games all the goddamn time, but I don't like ever get super competitive with it. The only fighting game I can think of I put as much time into is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Heritage for the Future. That game slaps. I really wish Capcom would re-release that game. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's one thing though to play competitively, and then there's another thing about playing casually. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm asking. Like, after that tournament, like, all right, I want to get good at it. You know, I want to learn, I want to improve, and I want to like. And did you like leave out that tournament? You're like, okay, I want to start competing.
Yes, it's pretty much what set me off after miraculously winning. I still have that limited edition Blaze Blue stick that they gave me. It's in the garage in the box.
That's cool.
But that's pretty much what got me into using an actual fight stick for everything that I play, because I started using that thing to learn how to play Blaze Blue, and then later down the line, Persona 4 and Ultimax.
Okay, so you got into Blaze Blue after that tournament, and then you started competing with Persona.
Yes.
Right? Okay. All right, and so any other like Japanese tournaments you could say, or any more stories you were while you were in Japan you share?
Not,
and you said you stayed on a base, right? Yeah, so you were staying with other fellow
Marines. Marine Corps base. Okay, it was a naval base, but yeah.
Okay. So that's it. Cool. That's cool. All right, then. So let's fast forward a little bit. So when you got out of the military, and now you're kind of in stateside. Did you meet Tyson before or after when you got shipped to Japan?
Once I got home.
After you met. So now you met like another person. Once I got who's like
home. That's when I finally met who Tyson is, and when my brother was talking to me about, that was the first time I got to meet him.
Okay, and so from then on, you're like, hey, I have this guy here who's also competitive in the fighting game, and he gave me some pointers, and now you have, like now you could start, like, building network. It was
pretty much because of Tyson that I grew fond and had the urge to go to actual major tournaments, not just, like, random locals to have fun.
Not the locals, like, you want to try to get to
Tyson was also... He also pretty much drilled into me how to. He drilled fundamentals into me pretty much when we played Street Fighter V.
Gotcha.
Like, how to play neutral, what to do, you know, stuff like that. He even taught me option select, stuff like that. Stuff like that I had no clue about.
Okay.
Because of
Tyson, just playing arcade.
Because of Tyson, that I became the player that I am now, and it's all thanks to him.
That's good. Well, you know, Tyson, if you're listening to man, A1, man, you got my boy Levy here into competitive fighting games. So good on you, man. Hopefully we'll have him soon on the show. Okay, so that's interesting. So let's talk about like right now. So what is right now your main games? Like you said earlier, you mentioned Cross Tag Battle. Are you still like playing that like competitively, or you're just like
yes.
Okay, okay. And did you get into Grand Blue like your brother? Or...
No, I played Grand Blue as well. I just mainly focus on BB Tag for now.
Okay, so here's my question I want to ask you. Do you try your best to, like, get good at, like, one game, like, get competitive, like, compete with one game, and then you try, like, experimenting with other ones? Or, like, how does that work? Because I can't imagine, like, you try to, like, do, like, five different games at the same time, right?
So pretty much what I do is that,
unless you can,
you know, if you focus too hard on one thing, eventually you're going to burn yourself out. So you need something to sidetrack you to get your mind off it so you can cool down and relax. That's pretty much what I was doing with Grand Blue Fantasy Versus. I entered, you know, online tournaments and stuff just for fun. But pretty much I was just using that game to take a break, you know, relax from Blaze Blue. Because, you know, that game's wild. It's wild. That game is fucking wild. So I pretty much used Grand Blue Fantasy Versus as an outlet to relax. And it, because it played almost similarly, I guess pace wise to you know, Street Fighter game, like I was, you know, I grew accustomed to it, and I'm like, yeah, I can play this as a side game, and it's pretty much what I do.
Your skills can transfer over to other anime fighting games. Gotcha. Okay, well, so right now Cross Tag Battle is your main game, and you just play Grand Blue to just be like, I'm gonna try this out to relieve myself a little bit from playing Cross Tag, because I can imagine you get hella burned out when you're only playing one fighting game, especially when a fighting game frustrates the hell out of you. I can imagine that could be like, I can't play this, and I imagine that you probably play like other games too, like not just fighting games, like, you know, RPGs.
I'm an avid
you just sometimes you need to take a break. Like, I can't imagine being like a one, you know, one game streamer or something like that, because that would drive me.
Longer. I mean, that's pretty much how you build up a viewing a community. Pretty much, you just stream that one game, and eventually you'll get a small little gathering. Yeah, a loyal fan base.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like if you're like, it's fine if you're like, okay, I want to play Street Fighter and I want to be known as a Street Fighter player, but eventually you kind of want to like branch out a little bit. You want to do other things. You don't want to play one game that makes you frustrated, and then you got to deal with like the streaming environment, and you know, that could kind of like egg that kind of problem on, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I've seen a bunch of Street Fighter V players that get frustrated, they hate the game, they can't stand it, and they keep playing it over and over again, and it's like, you know, it's not even the thing.
Street,
like,
Fighter V. That was actually one of the first fighting games I streamed on Twitch.
Right, and that's why how I discovered you. You played Street Fighter. Man, I mean, it was like season.
No, I started two, with season maybe, one.
I mean, when I met you. I remember it was like Ed just got released.
Season two, I believe.
Yeah, that was when Ed got released. I remember I hung out with you. The first time I met you was when Ed was new. And I remember you and me were sitting on your couch and we were watching Ed gameplay. Is that who I'm thinking of? Is it Ed or...
Well, how did they play him?
Guile's buddy from
Alpha. Oh, Nash? Nash.
No, not Nash. Not Nash.
But you said Guile's buddy.
The guy...
Charlie.
Oh, no, it's probably... It's...
Yeah, Charlie. Is it Charlie? Nash?
The one with the hoodie on, the one who has like that weird like boxing fighting style. Oh,
Balrog?
No, not Balrog. He's blonde. He has a white hoodie on. That's Ed. Okay, I'm making sure because I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's Ed.
Yeah, but
okay.
He's not Guile. He is not Guile's buddy. No.
Oh, wasn't he like a background character for like a Guile ending or something? I don't know my Street Fighter lore.
Ed is pretty much one of those plot tools that Bison was going to use to transfer his body over because
right, that's why he has like he has that like weird powers.
He was going to do the same thing to Cammy.
Yeah, god, Cammy's fucking clone character in Street Fighter 4, man, that was hoonanny. That was a funny meme. I love the Skullgirls reference. That was hilarious. Okay, then so right now Cross Tag Battle is your main thing. So, you know, we're about to hit an hour here. So let me go ahead and talk about this one thing that it's been really irking me. Not irking me, but kind of like interesting me. You brought up that fighting games, majority of them have, especially what I've noticed, a lot of Japanese fighting games have really wonky net code. Now, I'm not a network developer. I don't know exactly the terminology, but I've always keep hearing people saying that a lot of fighting games have really shitty net code. And whenever I look at people, when they say like good examples of net code, most people bring up like Mortal Kombat, Killer Instinct. So what exactly, like, I could see like Street Fighter V online gameplay and I could look at it visually that there's missing frames of animation.
Yeah.
And like, I could tell you that, like, yes, Street Fighter V probably has some really wonky ass netcode, and I could visually see it. Like, if you put two gameplay videos and they're exactly the same, you could tell, because like, you can see like Ryu do like a heavy kick, and like, you just see the point of impact, but you don't see like the swing around he does to do the animation. You know what I'm saying?
That's so all because of Well, Street Fighter V tried implementing what's known as the rollback.
Right, which I've heard about this a lot. I mean, because I play a lot of like Fightcade and stuff, and they bring up that they try to implement like rollback netcode. Is there a way you could like explain it to someone like me who might not know what it
is? Pretty much, rollback netcode is, you know, the connection between you and another player. To make things synced up, rollback will pretty much roll back the frame so that they're on sync between both players. That's how that works.
Oh, okay.
And then you have the delay-based netcode, which, as you can already tell by how it sounds, between the connection, they keep the game synced, but there's a noticeable delay, and that's what people don't like. But people are, you know, at least the players in Japan are used to using delay-based netcode because they're not like super spread apart far from each other. Whereas compared to
it's an island. So, yeah. Whereas
compared to the states,
having
delay-based netcode is really bad. Especially when you have like a coast-to-coast connection. Whoo, man.
Like from East Coast to West Coast.
That's really bad.
That's a big county wide, you know, like, and that's just like when that codes in general would, like, God forbid you're like playing like Call of Duty, for example, that still uses like host migration and stuff like that. You know, it's frustrating. Yep. So, and that's just like Japan's like way. Cause I remember Max was talking about this at one point where like he went to Japan and he talked to these developers and said, look, you got to implement better netcode. You got to understand that the netcode that works in here doesn't work for other countries and other territories.
Make these games with that in mind.
With that mindset, that's crazy to think about. You know,
they just like, we want to make this game as perfectly playable for our players, and then have the localization for netcode as a second thought for other ports or for other versions of the game worldwide.
Right. Right. And I mean, I play like Smash Brothers, and I could definitely tell you that the entire competitive tier list is completely lopsided when you play like Smash Brothers online versus playing Smash Brothers in person. It's crazy that like the meta is so drastically different when you're just playing online. Like heavies are ridiculously powerful online, but when you play like in tournaments, it's like much more easier to manage. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that's an interesting point that, like, you know, what can we do to fix this? Like, that's why, like, Skullgirls, for example, has a really good fighting game netcode compared to, like, other fighters in the market today. So I think it's mainly just a Japanese thing where it's, like, maybe they just don't, like, they just use that same logic and then, like, it works with us, so it should work for them. But unfortunately, though, that's not the case. And, you know, with games with having such, and I've noticed with like, I think the worst is still like Street Fighter V's netcode. But if we're just talking about like briefly, like if we're talking about like absolutely horrible netcode, we could easily agree that Brawl probably has the worst fighting game netcode ever. That was a fucking catastrophe. Granted, they're making strides, they're making it better, but
at least, you know, we're not gonna with anime fighting games, like Persona, for example. That's when I first noticed they used the delay based netcode, but they also introduced the connection what's it called? And actually, it tells you how delayed by frames it is, and you.
But isn't like I've heard this before. Mainly, this was when Grand Blue. No, I think it was Crosstag Bad. I think your brother and other people mentioned that the symbol they let you know like how good your connection is very misleading.
It is very misleading. It's not the sometimes it'll display the connection that you would usually think that's connection to you, But no, it's the connection to the server because you're in the public lobby. So you would expect most of those connections, like, okay, you know, this guy's a 3-bar to me. And then when you play him, it's a complete and utter trap. You're wondering
why. Yeah. It's the connection that if you're meeting up to one spot, but when you start actually fighting, the middleman is out of the corner, out of the... Gotcha. Okay, that's a easier way to explain it, because that makes sense, because you just have, like, all these cute avatars walking around with, like, greens and yellow bars.
And then some of those connections are the connection to you, but, like, again, it's misleading, because sometimes it's to you or it's to the server, and you can't tell until you play them.
Right, right.
Which is why people... Right, you know, they take the risk of playing a 1-bar, and then the connection ends up being decent, surprisingly.
Right. Okay then. Well, that's a good point. So thank you. I think that's a very simple way to look at it, and things like that nature. So we're coming up to the hour. So let's go ahead and change it up a little bit. So what did you think about the PlayStation 5 reveal? Because
I'm very excited for the PlayStation 5, despite it looking like my Sony wireless router that I've got here.
Yeah, everyone. Oh man, I was like, "Oh, this is beta PS, like elite beta PS3 design, man. This thing is gonna be such a pain to set up."
And then a chat with a bunch of my buddies in Discord, and as we were watching this thing live, we got the reveal to how the console looked, and the first thing that I said was, why does this thing look like my white wireless Netgear modem? And everyone just lost their shit because it looks just like it. And then there's a regular one, and then a digital one.
What the
fuck? Like, can we? I don't know.
I will make the argument that I'm not against the idea. Here's the thing. Microsoft did this first with the Xbox. The problem was that it was so late into the generation that by the time you release the Xbox One Digital, it's already cheap enough to just get a used Xbox One S with a drive included than the price of a brand new Xbox One Digital. And I'm not against it. Look, I have a PlayStation 4. Admittedly, though, right now it's kind of like a paperweight. I don't use it much, except for Bloodborne. But I haven't touched Bloodborne in a while, and the rumors of it coming to PC make me excited. But I went back and I look at all the games I have digitally through the PlayStation Plus service, and I realize, holy crap, I have a lot of games that I haven't touched yet. Like, a good example is I just bought the Resident Evil 1 remake on Steam, and I didn't even remember it. I had it already on PlayStation 4. So I'm not against it. I had a conversation with this with a friend of mine who said that a lot of people don't buy physical games anymore because there's kind of no point to it, because you have to install majority of the disc already onto the console. When I first had my first PS4 with the 500 gigabytes, I could barely have 3 games readily available to play. So I'm not against it. My question is, though, is how big is the hard drive and how much of a price difference are we talking about? Yeah,
because I buy digital games every now and then, but mostly I buy the disc because, you know, having to set aside time to do like 2-3 hour downloads, and then once you do that, you got to download the update, whereas I just pop the disc in and then download an update and that's it.
Right. Or God forbid you have to install the remainder of the game.
But, you know, I don't know why they made it separate, 2 separate consoles for it. I don't like that idea. I think they should...
I mean, I guess at launch it would be a little bit more complicated. Yeah,
they should have just done that later down the line. Like, hey, don't buy discs. Or
can't. Like, when the Sling comes out, you make a digital version. Like,
you know, maybe there's some people out there that don't have, you know, access to buying, you know, discs for the game, for the console or whatever. So they have to buy mostly everything online. Or most games are cheaper digitally, and they just want to, you know, later down the line that would have been acceptable. But as a console release? I mean, 2 different consoles, one for the disc, one for digital. That makes no sense to me. Because
I could agree to that. I guess
going to assume it at the launch. Digital only one's going to be cheaper because the disc won't do both.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be excited for that.
But how the question is, though, this is my only irk with the is my question. There's no pricing. They haven't brought up pricing for the Xbox.
How much is this thing going to cost?
My theory is it's going to cost at a minimum of $500.
It's going to be the base price of the PS4 Pro. And at that point, look, I'm going to be completely transparent. I'm a PC gamer. I'm still going to be a PC gamer. I am not remotely excited for the PlayStation 5. Demon's Souls Remastered looks dope, but I'm not going to buy a $500 box.
And I'm going to wait for the price to go down. You know, prices aside and what they're doing, I'm hella fucking excited for the games that came out for PlayStation 5. You had the new... I'm surprised they even did this. Oddworld is getting another game. Ratchet and Clank. Resident Evil Village. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's funny because everyone brought up, like, is this the Resident Evil 4 remastered? I was like, no. God, no. God,
I'm excited to see what they're going to do because it's a direct sequel for Resident Evil 7 since the character...
Which I still need to play.
I didn't know it was until they revealed... the character that's on the floor that you're viewing through is Ethan, the original main character from Resident Evil 7.
Oh, yeah. From 7. Okay. My only regret is that I had a PlayStation VR headset. I don't have it with me anymore, but I do have a copy of Resident Evil 7 on my PS4, and I was going to play the game in VR.
But unfortunately, though, I sold my PSVR and got the Rift S. And to this day, I don't know why Capcom hasn't bothered trying to implement like an official VR setup on the PC side of Resident Evil 7. But who knows, maybe someday someone will let me borrow the PSVR and I'll try it that way. But, you know, it's really fascinating that, like, Capcom is really double dipping on this, like, let's make Resident Evil more horror focused. Because, like, you know, if we compare, like the direct competition would be Silent Hill if it was still around. What I find so interesting is that Resident Evil 7 was, like, I think, in my opinion, it was trying to capitalize on the current trend of, like, indie horror games. You know, first person, very spooky up in the face, which is fine. I'm not against it. I like it when a company, when you want to try something different. Look at Resident Evil 4. That paid off really well, and now that's getting a remake, which that's, you know, considering how many times Capcom likes to re-release that
Resident
game,
I'm interested. Resident Evil 4 was probably one of the best Resident Evil games that they, at least numbers sales-wise, was a huge hit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh no, absolutely. I was talking about that with a friend. He's like, "Well, what's so good about it?" I was like, "Well, it's the creative peak of the series. It killed off the original intention, but it built off a new style. But it also was like the perfect middle ground."
I don't
think what I'm
playing games with tank controls is modern at all. Like that'll put off a lot of.
Well, tank controls in what kind of camera angle we're talking about?
Oh God, the fixed camera angle. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, it's funny because when you really think about it, the controls are exactly the same. It's the camera angle that changes the dynamic of the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, there was a guy who modded Resident Evil 4 to use fixed camera angles to prove a point. And when you really think about it, they play exactly the same. The difference is the over-the-shoulder camera. It's the fact that we could adapt to it a little bit better because you're facing Leon from the back. You're not looking at Leon from an angle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So going back to Resident Evil 8, I'm kind of surprised that Capcom is double dipping it because now I'm really interested. Like, okay, what does Capcom see Resident Evil as? Now, I'm not going to be in the camp that says that Resident Evil is scary. I've always said that Resident Evil is scary in the sense of survival. Like, you're more scared of running out of bullets, not, oh my God, what's around the corner. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is.
I'm talking about from Resident Evil 2 to 3 up to that point.
I firmly believe Resident Evil 1, the huge fear is a combination of the tank control and not knowing what's around the corner and how low, keeping track of your resources. You combine all three of that together, that's what made Resident Evil 1 through 3, I think, one of the most classic games you can play on PlayStation.
Right, but I think I mean like that, it's like, okay, if you were to compare like Resident Evil 1 to Silent Hill, which would you say is more scarier? Silent Hill, because that's their focus. They prioritize the core. They focus the whole aspect of it, right? So that's like what I'm saying is that, like, it's interesting because now we're going through Resident Evil 1 through 3 remakes, which are, you know, for the most part, like, let's put the Resident Evil 4 control style.
Oh my God, remake for them. Oh my God, that was awesome. Oh my God, I loved it.
Right. So now I'm just interested to see, like, okay, is Capcom going to say, well, we have a winning formula with 7, and then later let's just keep doing the horror aspect for maybe up to Resident Evil 9, for all we know. Because generally speaking, I say that we noticed that, like, granted, if you want to, like, factor in, like, spinoffs and stuff, I would say we got Resident Evil 1, Code Veronica 2 and 3, Tank Controls focus, and we don't talk about Survivor because that game is a weird fan fiction piece of shit.
That was weird. That was just really weird.
Outbreak was a thing too, but that one was a huge clusterfuck of
weird net code. It was the early times of like online gaming.
It was fun. It was fun. It's just
I never played it. I've heard of it. I don't know if you could play it like single player wise. I think it was like one of those kind of games like Portable Ops Plus, where it's like practically useless now because
you can't play. Private community that still plays Resident Evil Outbreak. They even have a Discord. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, okay, that's cool. So I'm excited for Resident Evil 8. I was just kind of like,
it makes sense that they didn't stray away from the whole first person thing, because if it's a direct sequel, you wouldn't want to change the way they.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like
the third person view from Resident Evil 4 to 6.
Right. Okay, so yeah, I'm excited for Resident Evil 7. Resident Evil 8. That looks pretty good. Here's the thing. I was kind of looking forward to the presentation, not like as like a director or anything. I was just kind of like, all right, let's see what they have to show, because we already know Xbox is box. Now we need to know the PlayStation box. I saw the presentation late because I woke up late, and I started with Deathloop, and I was thinking like, wow, this reminds me a lot of Dishonored, and then I realized, oh, it's made by Arkane Studios.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna piss off a lot of Dishonored fans. I personally still think Dishonored is a iffy game with me, but I felt like, wow, it's almost like it's Dishonored, but you could use the powers for actual fun stuff, and not the game giving you all these powers and saying don't use them now because that'd be naughty. And I'm like, well, then why the fuck were you giving me these powers in the first place? Like, I get the message and the motive, but it's like, as a gamer, if you give me a rocket launcher, I want to use the goddamn rocket launcher. So Deathloop looks kind of dope. It kind of like has this like Dishonored quirk to it. So I'm kind of like, all right, this looks kind of dope. I'm not sure if it's an exclusive, but that looks kind of dope. The only other game that really caught my eye, aside from Demon Souls Remastered, which is interesting. I'm going to be complete transparency. I've only played like a little bit of Demon's Souls. This is back when I first got my PS3, and like, you know, God forbid you paid the actual retail price of the PS3 back then with barely any games. That was one of them. And I remember a friend of mine at the time in middle school was like, oh, get Demon's Souls. And, you know, back then I didn't know what I was getting into. You know, this is before Dark Souls came out, and people were saying that like, oh, Dark Souls is like super hard. It's like super like difficult and, you know, put tear in your balls and stuff. And like Demon's Souls at the time, I didn't know what I was getting into. I just thought like, okay, this is just a very clunky Zelda game to me. And so I didn't really get into it. I just, you know, I returned it. It was a rental, so I didn't really think much of it. Then when I played Dark Souls, then that's when I got into the Soulsborne series, and I love the series. But what I'm interested in is that it's being made by Blue Point Games, which is mainly a team that does remasters and re-releases, right? Which, going off of the Bloodborne PC leak, which I'm at this point convinced that it's a high possibility right now, because there's no way in hell.
Speaking of PC releases, I'm pretty sure you heard, but they're putting Persona 4 Golden on PC.
Right, I was about to bring that up. And I have a friend of mine who's probably really sad that like Persona 5 isn't coming out.
Persona 4, what was it? Persona 5 Royal just came out. If you expect PC release on top of that, slow down.
I think Atlas is going to be like, we are going to put our stuff in there because our parent company, Sega, has done everything with the Yakuza series, and that blew up really well. So we're going to go ahead and put our games on that as well. So I'm excited. I never played Persona 4. I've seen it. I've seen the anime a couple of times, not to the end, but I was just listening to the Persona 4 soundtrack, and I'm like, you know what? This is a perfect excuse. I would have personally preferred to have it on the Switch, because I generally like playing my RPGs on the go. But hey, you know, I think Persona 4 is a fine choice. I mean, hopefully we could get, you know, Persona 1 through 3 and the Shin Megami Tensei games in general. But, you know, we'll have to wait.
Still waiting on this.
Also, rest in peace. Also, one more thing. Rest in peace, Davida. You are officially not necessary anymore. It's like the scene in Toy Story 2 where he's like, I don't want to play with you anymore. Davida just gets thrown into the trash can. God damn, what a shame of a system.
I mean, you know, it's thanks to Davida that I got introduced to, you know, Golden, but also the Dangan.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No,
that's
sure.
How I got introduced to it via Vita.
If I was gonna play Persona 4, I would have definitely gotten a Vita for it, especially for cheap, or I got in a PlayStation TV. But if it comes to Steam, I'm excited. I really like it. I still vividly remember going to Dolphin, or I think it was Dalen Mall, and I still remember they had a little standee for a pre-order for Persona 4. And I just remember looking at the box and be like, what the hell am I looking at? I don't know. I just find Persona such a weird series. Like, it just came from a franchise. Like, wait, so it's a franchise called Shinigami Tensei, but it's a sub-series of the series. And now when Persona 4 came out, it suddenly became, like, super popular during the PS3 era, but it was a PS2 game, and everyone talked about it, and the art looked HD back in the day, and it was just, wow. So, yeah, Persona 4 Arena, Golden, I'm excited for it to come to Steam. I'm just glad to see more Persona getting out of the PlayStation.
I'm excited for it, but at the same time, I'm kind of, like, worried because a lot of people, this is probably their first introduction to Persona 4 in general, not just Persona games. So they're good. Like, the whole, if you didn't know, when Persona 4 first dropped, there was a lot of controversy between characters like Kanji, Naoto.
Everyone was telling me about
Yosuke
that.
Especially because everybody, like, when that game came out, everybody was just flaming the guy for being homophobic and everything, and that was not the case. And then there was the whole case, like, you know, oh, Kanji's super gay. He's, we, you know, gays claim him. And then you have oh, fucking freaking Naoto is transgender. You know, and like they were labeling it or her as a man and everything, whereas that is not the case. You need to pay attention way more.
Yeah, it's deeper than that, right? It's not like just hijinks or like a trope. It's like there's a deeper meaning behind it. Like Kaji's, you know, like attract, like thing for like adorableness. That's just a question.
He's also like, cause, you know, in Japan, at least you could see it in America too. Men liking cute things is frowned upon because it's not what a man would be.
Right. Is that like a thing in Japan as well? Like, if you're a guy and. Okay, so it's kind of okay. So yeah, like Kaji was
with the police force. With Naoto's case, women were looked down upon in the police force, so she had to cover that up and you know pose as a man and be treated like a guy. Yeah, that she deserved as a detective.
Yeah, I hopefully. I mean, like I know that with I know you bringing up the fear factor because I remember when like Persona 5 was getting re-released here, everyone kept bringing up like a transphobic joke was being removed. I tried asking questions and stuff, and no one could show me like a direct. What was it? It was just that like what the Ryuji said something about like guys in the shower or something.
No, Ryuji and the main character were at like the.
Hot
spring. They were in Tokyo and on the street, just in the middle of the street. And you know, there's two I guess flamboyant men commenting on how Ryuji looked cute, and you know, we can make you look cuter by dressing you up and whatnot. And like that was it.
Okay.
And they're like they removed that.
They completely removed that scene.
No impact to the fucking story whatsoever. So why getting all upset over it was beyond me, man. But whatever.
Yeah, it's a thing, man. Like that's why, like I argue that there's a difference between translation and localization. Translation is like you get fan subs, you get people who directly translate a script from Japanese to English. Which, if you know anything about Japanese, it is way more complicated than it is. There's like entire moments where like an entire sentence is the entire meaning of a sentence could be drastic by just misinterpreting one word that means like 15 different things. You know what I'm saying? So. With localization, it's that you take a Japanese thing and try to make it understandable to us Westerners. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You can't just assume that everyone who's playing this Japanese role-playing game is that they know like Japanese quirks and like Japanese like slang or Japanese you know way of living. You know what I'm saying? Like it doesn't translate. You know what I'm saying? That's why fucking Pokemon had donuts. That's the thing. Who the fuck in the Midwest is gonna understand like rice balls and donuts? Exactly, like that's the point. Like, four kids just said, our dumb kids in the Texas are not going to understand what the fuck they mean.
As a kid watching that episode with the primate episode, even I can tell that's not what a jelly donut looks like. It looks like a ball.
Right, but like, there's been cases where like they'll change up a sandwich, for example, like to make it an actual sandwich. You know, it's just one of those things. Like localization is more difficult than it sounds. You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, I get your complicated. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think the majority of people who are picking up Persona 4, especially on PC, are most likely already Persona fans. But, you know, we'll wait and see when that comes out.
Have a whole bunch of people that are used to how Persona 5 and 5 Royal are. And, you know, because for this generation, I don't want to sound like I'm some kind of like you know, an oldie, but like
boomer.
Yeah, boomer, I guess. But you know, is Persona 4 Golden Persona 5 Royal and Persona 5 in general was like a lot of people's first introduction to the Persona series.
Right, right.
Yeah, have all these new kids get introduced to Persona 4 Golden, and there's going to be so many misconceptions to clear up, and I don't know if I have the heart to deal with that.
I don't think Atlas is going to get canceled on Twitter over it, but
no, it's
But I hope not, and I drastically hope that, like, I think people are just gonna like understand it. And again, it's always a vocal minority, you know what I'm saying? Like, even though when people like say like, oh, cancel this because like they made a joke about this, it's a small bunch of loud people that are just making a hustle of it.
I mean, like, with people
how, generally with bandwagon.
How the current generation is, where you like everyone's so protective on, you know, transgender and you know, you know, gay pride and all that stuff, and then I guarantee it, someone's gonna be upset once they see the many interactions with, I'm sorry, like, I'm sad to say this, but with Yosuke being kinda, like, it's gonna rub people the wrong way, because they're gonna probably assume he's just, like, homophobic.
I get you. No, I could understand. At all. Like, it's more like, hey, man, no, that's gay, bro. Like, chill out. Whoa, relax. Like, it's not, like, him, like, curb, no, like, causing the scene or, like, it's just like, whoa, dude, that's gay. Whoa, well, chill out.
Like, that's not what happens. But, like, you know, he like, there's this whole, have you seen the anime at all? Or seen?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
There's the scene where they're pretty much, keeping an eye on Kanji and him interacting with.
Oh, and they're following him.
Yeah, and
yeah, that scene was great. Yeah, like, yeah.
Instant deduction. It's like, oh, he's gay, and he's trying to hook up with this, you know, this male detective, which they come to find out, no, it's a girl, and no, he's not gay. He just likes really cute things, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, and they don't, like, bemoan, they never make fun of him or anything like that. They just say, like, oh, he just likes cute things. They're very supportive.
A lot of
it,
times,
you know?
You know, Yosuke says things, you know, he's the kind of character that talks with his foot in his mouth. He ends up putting his foot in his
mouth. Right, yeah, constantly.
But that's
right.
His character. Awkward, you know, awkward.
Doesn't read the scene and doesn't read the environment. No. That's his shtick, is that, like, he's kind of like, he thinks before he speaks before he thinks, you know? Like, it doesn't mean but that's fine. Like, I'm fine with that. There's nothing wrong with a character that like that, as long as he's not mean spirited or hurting anyone. But so like, that's excited. So getting off of the Persona topic, as far as the only other game that really caught my eye was Spider-Man, which is interesting. I read an article. Apparently, it's not a new game. It's an expansion. So it's re-releasing again, I'm not 100% sure. I didn't double check the source, but I remember reading an article in the morning while I was driving home from work. They said that it's actually like a re-release of the original PS4 game, but with the Miles expansion included in it. So I don't know. Maybe this could mean a better running PS4 Spider-Man. Maybe it wasn't intended to be a full game. Maybe it was just like not like an expansion, you know what I'm saying? So that looks kind of dope. I'm excited for that. Let me see, is there anything else I could think on the top of my mind? Like, I didn't really see like all the trailers or anything. I at that point when I was late, I was like, screw it, I'll look up like the tweets and stuff, and I'll check like the articles and look up what they talked about. Horizon Zero Dawn is getting a sequel, which is funny because the original game just got released on PC, so I don't know. Maybe they're going to do the same thing with the sequel later. Maybe, I don't know. That's an interesting point. But yeah, I don't think there's anything else I could think on the top of my mind. That new Ratchet and Clank. That's interesting. I'm still waiting to play the original games. But aside that, though, I can't think of anything else. Anything else to really mention about the PlayStation?
There is this one game that I don't recall the title, but the trailer was like this guy wearing like an astronaut suit.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Pragmata.
Yes.
At first I thought, oh fuck, it's another Strand type game. Shit. God damn it, Kojima.
Surprisingly enough, I almost missed it. Not a lot of people, when I was watching it, noticed who was published and developed by. It's Capcom. And I'm like, it's gonna. Yeah. I'm hoping it plays just like Lost Planet, because that game was awesome.
God, I gotta play Lost Planet. That's a game.
So, like, I'm hyped for. That's another game I'm hyped for. Pragmata. That's
okay. I mean, generally speaking, whenever I see like trailers like that, unless it's a known IP, I don't generally get like super excited. I'm just like interested. But like, I get where you're coming from. Maybe either, I mean, Pragmata is a new IP, so we'll wait and see where we go from there. Let's see, is there anything else left to bring up at current events? I think we're good. I think we already hit like almost the hour and 30 minute mark. So let's go ahead and wrap. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Pepper Podcast. I appreciate you for joining us today. I want to thank my special guest here, Broske Levy. It was great having you, my friend. Let me go ahead and ask, like, how could people reach out to you? Do you have a Twitter? Do you have a Twitch? You know, drop them right now.
You could just follow me at Broske _ Levi. Same thing for Twitch. It's the same thing. Original, I know, but I usually just keep the names the same. I don't have a fancy, like, at for Twitter or anything.
No, I don't blame you. I have it basically as at Pepper Tweet Boy, and then my Twitch is at twitch.tv/ Pepper Stream Boy, because it's just, you know. So I generally want to keep the Pepper name, but unfortunately, really it's not.
Thing, by a lot the way, of people as we were doing this podcast, they were doing a Guilty Gear Strive Stream announcement or reveal, and a new character just got announced, or a reoccurring character got announced to be put into the game. And it's Ramlethal. Oh, that's character. I'm like looking through Twitter and like, wow, this is amazing. She looks good.
That's good. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up, my friend. It was great having you here. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Pepper Podcast. Have a good one and take care. And take care, my good friend Levy. Wish you well in the future and good luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Goodbye, everyone. Bye.